Boy, I am standing here on the roof of the Kennedy Center with one of my oldest show business friends.
In all senses of the term.
That's right. Not just a friend of long standing, but genuinely old. You are really hugely old, are you not?
I'm the oldest man living.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 275, Actor Dennis Parlato. I've known Dennis Parlato since 1970, in the early 70s, when he joined the Metropolitan Ballet Company of Oakland as a featured solo dancer, and I was a way too young stage manager. And if you're a soap fan of a certain age, you know Dennis from when he played the evil Michael Grand on One Life to Live in the late 80s and early 90s, as well as various stints on the soaps Loving and Santa Barbara. Or if you're a fan of musicals, you know Dennis from the original Broadway production of Chess and the original off-Broadway production of Romance. The point is, the dude's been around a long time, and a nicer, more talented actor I do not know. And as a total coincidence, he is headed to our old stomping grounds in Lowell, Massachusetts, where he's about to appear as Mr. Whitney in the Merrimack Repertory Theater production of Mrs. Whitney, which opens this week. Well, last summer in 2011, Dennis and I stood on the rooftop terrace of the Kennedy Center, directly under the flight path of D.C.'s National Airport, and Dennis was good enough to talk to me about how he stumbled into the worlds of dance and acting.
I'm kind of an example of how to find a career that works by trying different ones.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because what I did was basically follow, and there's a lot to be said for this, I think, and I was lucky to have a father who said, don't just go for the money, you know, find something you love doing. So I just followed my instincts, which first took me to my passion of I wanted to teach. I wanted to teach college, and then I thought, no, I don't want to go to school that long. I think I'll teach high school.
Perfect.
More interesting, maybe more interesting students, too. And from there, I got into it in the public school system of San Francisco and thought, you know, I don't like the restrictions of the public school system. The private school system doesn't pay enough. And I think I don't want to do this as a primary profession. I think I need to be in the performing arts because I grew up with that kind of family.
Well, your dad was in showbiz. He was a musician and a trumpeter for Lawrence Welk's orchestra for many, many years.
Well, that was his final job. He came up in the 30s and 40s in Buffalo, New York, you know, playing, doing the radio shows, big bands. He was offered Tommy Dorsey. He turned it down.
Oh, no!
He didn't want to be on the road. So he moved to L.A., but he played with a lot of big bands and made his living, made a good living, and supported five kids. He was in a movie with Frank Sinatra. He had a line, you know, standing with his trumpet there. And, you know, Andy Williams, Kay Kaiser, Bing Crosby, a Tennessee Ernie Ford television show, et cetera, et cetera, all kinds of things. And then finished up with 20 years on Lawrence Welk. And since money was tightening up and he had five kids, he thought, you know what, I'm not crazy about the Welk music, but it's a great gig for security.
Right.
Pension plans,
right, sure.
Profit sharing, all that stuff.
Sure. And did you do stuff, did you do shows in high school?
Only one, and I was kind of forced into it by one of the nuns, you know? But I remember I played the lead, and my father came to see it. He says, you're a pretty good actor.
He said grudgingly.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It is funny because I, you know, I think looking back on it all, I mean, acting was my third career, starting at 30. But I think from a extremely young age, growing up on movies, I was a closet performer, closet actor.
Right.
Because I used to... Sometimes I wonder, is this, like, unusual? I mean, from a young age, I remember I'd be hiking in the hills near my house, imagining a camera, you know, was, you know, filming it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Catholic schoolboy, the whole thing about being an altar boy was, you know, the theater of it.
The performance aspect of it. Yeah.
So I would watch the thing as a 6-year-old. on the altar, and I would go home and set up the bathroom with all the, you know, props from the mass, and I would do all the movements.
Wow.
You know, and yearned to be an altar boy. And so I think I wanted to be on that stage.
But how did that lead to dance, ballet? I mean, that seems like a thing you start young. Well, and don't tell me it was just the girls in the tights, or was it?
Oh, God. It should have been. I remember there were some dancers that came to our high school, and we were a bunch of jocks, you know, and we just made fun of the tights, you know. And I wish I had gotten it then.
Yes.
Because it was my early 20s before I got it. By then, I'm teaching high school. My first free and clear summer with a salary enough to take a trip to Europe with my first wife. We're roaming around Europe, and one night, something to do, we stumble into a theater in Amsterdam where the Netherlands Dance Theater was performing, Carmina Burana, having no idea that they were like one of the premier companies in the world. And this particular piece was a world-famous, incredible piece of ballet theater, modern ballet theater. So we go in to watch it, and the second movement is, I love the music, Carmina Burana. Mm-hmm. The second movement is an adagio, and there's a man and woman half-clothed, intertwining themselves in one of the most erotic things I've ever seen. And I sat there and I thought, where have I been all my life? I have to do this. It's got everything I want.
Yeah.
It's got the aesthetic music. It's got the eroticism. It's got the athleticism.
Yeah.
Former high school athlete.
Sure.
So I got hooked. I went, got hooked. Found a couple of my high school students who were studying ballet, and I said, take me to your teacher.
Ah, that's great.
And so that led to that, and I got addicted. And that was, I was already doing music on the side as a high school teacher, but this addicted me, and it was my way into the arts. So I cut the teaching the next year to half a day for half pay.
Right.
So by noon, I was free to dance all day and night.
Wow.
And then the following year, I got on the sub list as a teacher.
Yeah.
So I was free to just be poor.
But you did, I guess you did modern, you did classical. You were doing classical ballets with the company that we worked together with.
Yeah, which was...
You were the Nutcracker Prince.
Oh, my God. It was an incredible... I mean, I was deliriously happy doing all that. And I was with another company in San Francisco, which was a group of renegade dancers, renegade San Francisco ballet dancers who wanted a looser atmosphere and more of an open repertoire. So that was a company of some pretty damn good dancers.
At what point did you go, all right, I got to go to New York, and maybe I can dance on Broadway or whatever.
Again, it's an example of somebody who doesn't, like, say, this is what I'm going to accomplish.
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, I backed, well, the teaching career, I went into, I made it happen.
Yeah.
Dancing happened by accident, and going to New York, I don't think I would have gone at that age, but my fiancée at the time, Maggie Caponio, was... much younger, much better, more talented. She got a scholarship to New York City Ballet. That was my ride to New York.
Right, right. And no offense to you, much more beautiful.
Much more beautiful.
Than you. That's right, of course you
did. Say the least. So, yeah.
You married one of my very first crushes. Congratulations.
I remember you telling me she broke your heart, too.
Yeah, she did. Oh, too, yes. We share that bond.
So that... God knows, I don't know. I don't know if I would have gotten it together to go to New York until I realized I should stop dancing. So this was a 2-month thing, and we said we'll go, and I'll just go for the ride and see what's there. If we like it, we'll stay. If we hate it, we'll come back to San Francisco.
Yeah.
We loved it. I started to audition. We were stone cold broke. I auditioned for everything under the sun. She spent the scholarship money, or the scholarship summer, and then started getting work with the Princeton Ballet Company.
Right. Okay.
And we stayed, and I started to get work after auditioning for everything, including ballet companies from Ireland, Italy, and Canada. But I also started auditioning for plays, just on raw instinct.
Okay.
And also for musicals, Broadway musicals, which I knew nothing about. I didn't know who Bob Fosse was. I didn't know a show called Chicago. I didn't know anything. I saw in the trade papers singers who dance, dancers who sing. Well, I do both of those.
Right.
And within 1 month was standing in front of Bob Fosse auditioning for the National Tour of Chicago without knowing anything about it.
Wow.
And you got the gig, obviously.
Didn't get that gig.
Didn't get the gig.
But I did get down to the last 12 people. The beginning started out like the beginning of the movie, All That Jazz, that he does with about 500 of us on stage.
Yeah.
And after the end of the second day, which and then he was there smoking away, I got down to the last 12 people. Now, by then, I wanted the job.
Yeah.
And there's fun stories to tell, but it's too long. But the ultimate moment was after, you know, dancing and singing and reading and all that, he had his dance again, and so he's cutting people, you know, in his inimitable way, you know, very kindly and walking up and shaking your hand and saying, I'm very sorry. So he has three of us dance at a time, and he confers on the apron of the stage, and then he walks towards me. And he comes up and he says, I'm really sorry, shakes my hand. And I knew nothing of the etiquette.
Oh, dear.
So I went, oh, God, you got to tell me why. And I'm sure all the boys in the wings thought, who is this? Who yeah. is this bumpkin? And Fosse looked at me like, are you kidding? And but he was nice, so I saw his you know, his brain roll around a little bit, and he says, "Yeah, I just didn't like the way he did that last combination." I mean, you know, he just made something.
Yeah, right.
You gotta tell me why. No, didn't get that job, but within a couple of months, I was working in Jersey Dinner Theater and getting some credits and doing some pretty good roles, musicals and plays. And then after 2 years, got into Chorus Line and started and used the dancing, but right. eventually was doing more and more acting.
Right. Well, and in Chorus Line, you were oh, right. you played the director.
Yeah, which was just, it was mainly for the acting that hired
yeah.
me. Yeah.
yeah. But you looked like a dancer. I mean, you know, you look like a former dancer.
Exactly.
You know?
And the director, they liked it if you could demonstrate the dancing, if you could dance with the cast and demonstrate how to do it.
Yeah.
So you were using all your triple threat talents.
Right. Yeah, you don't have to do it to the ensemble standard. You can do it in your standard because as the director.
Yeah. 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 But if you're demonstrating the most difficult combination yeah. and the technique of it, it's good if you have the technique. And I had so much ballet training right. that it was much more than most Broadway people.
Hi, this is Peter Bergman of the Firesign Theater. And, you know, whenever I slip back in history, back to the Renaissance or to Elizabethan England, I always come back with an enlarged appreciation of reduced Shakespeare. And you're on the ReducedShakespeare.com site, you lucky guy.
Where can you RSC the RSE? This spring and summer of 2012, you'll be able to RSC us in 34 cities in the U.S. and the U.K., including cities like New Bremen and New Philadelphia, Ohio, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Waverly, Iowa, Tacoma and Edmonds, Washington, Sonoma and Santa Rosa, California, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and then we will return to the U.K. in June, performing in York, Buxton, Exeter, Newbury, Nottingham, Truro, Poole, Tunbridge Wells, Peterborough, Canterbury, Derby, Hereford, Real, Barnsley, Salford, Basingstoke, Crawley, where we hope to meet Lord and Lady Grantham, Bedford, Tewkesbury, and London, returning to the Arts Theatre. Now, other cities may be added, so keep checking our tour page, and for a short time only, the Arts Theatre in London is selling a reduced number of tickets per performance for the special London Olympics 2012 price of 2012. That's right, tickets, some tickets for every performance at the Arts Theatre in London are being sold for £20.12. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with a great actor and hell of a guy, Dennis Parlato.
Something you said strikes me as kind of an important or a potentially important lesson is that not knowing any better is a great thing. And it seems like you have kind of not known any better. You've gotten yourself into situations with maybe a smarter guy or a less daring guy would have said, I shouldn't do that.
Exactly. I mean, the downside is you make a lot of mistakes, you know, that can put you behind the curve, you know, of your competition. The upside of it is that if you knew what you know 30 years later about the business, you just would walk away.
Yeah, you wouldn't have ever gone into the business.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I always tell people, you know, the young people who ask, I say, you cannot have too much confidence. You know, be cocky.
Yeah.
It'll be, have all the confidence you need, because people are going to try and tear you down left and right, and just the rejection is going to be tough.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't believe in yourself enough. I mean, have something to back that up with.
Yes.
But, you know, confidence and the whole, I mean, I look back thinking about, you know, what I believe, you know, I could do, you know, and it served me well. I mean, in that sense, bliss, ignorance is a bliss and strength, actually.
Well, and I remember, you know, I got, one of the reasons I got into directing was that I had been directed by, you know, a lot of good people, but every now and then, even the good directors will do something that I'll go, oh, what an asshole. And I swore I would never be that kind of a director. And then I'm at American Stage Festival. I'm directing a production of Cyrano de Bergerac. I tell you that we're doing Little Night Music, and of course we want you to play Frederick in Little Night Music. Of course, I said, and you say, well, what are you directing? I said, well, I'm directing Cyrano de Bergerac. And you said, well, where's my audition? Why don't I get an audition for Cyrano de Bergerac?
Yeah.
And I had done exactly what every other asshole director does.
Okay.
I said, oh, well, Dennis, oh, that's musical theater boy. That's, by that time, at that exact moment, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
At that exact moment, you were in, you were a soap star. You were a bad guy. You played Michael Grant on One Life to Live. You were kind of a soap star at that very moment, but that didn't enter in. I just thought, oh, well, all right, soap boy, musical theater boy, yeah, I'll go with a classical actor. And you went, well, and but then you said, I should get an audition. I went, well, duh, of course you should get an audition. Jesus Christ, of course, of course. And then I was just talking about this with my brother John, who was reading for us that day. We were talking about how you, it's one of the classic examples of how you won the part in the room. You wanted an audition, you came in with the Mercutio Queen Mab speech, which is perfect for Cyrano.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You nailed, hit it out of the park, to pick your sports metaphor.
Yeah.
And as it happens, I wanted to do a swashbuckling version of Cyrano de Bergerac, and you look not unlike Kevin Kline and Errol Flynn. And you move like a dancer. So there's this element of grace and passion and romance that Cyrano must have. So you matched the guy in my head on top of all your talent.
Lucky timing, because it could have been that you had a whole different thing in mind, and I would have been summarily dismissed.
You might have been, but it was just, you know, our jaws kept dropping lower and lower and lower. And my question to you at the time was, have you ever picked up a sword in your life? And you said, no, no. And I said, well, all right. So if we go with you, Dennis, how do you anticipate learning the fight moves? And you went, if I get this part, I'm hiring a personal trainer the next day.
And I did.
Yeah. And you did, and you did. And your dance training stood you in such good stead for all that fight choreography.
Exactly. I mean, I knew that I knew I would pick up the phrases of the fight quickly, but I needed to get some training, and I found this excellent person and had some intensive training. Yeah. But then I was also, and then of course the dance experience is a huge help. But also the tavern fight, obviously, with Velver, it was Bjorn Johnson, who is like completely trained, and one of B.H. Berry's boys, and so he took care of me, and he taught me, he was making me look good, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and on top of everything else, I thought it would be such a great idea for the fight that Cyrano, where he fights 100 people in an alley, which usually happens offstage. I wanted to see that fight, so we staged that fight.
And you nearly killed me.
I nearly killed you, but all in a good cause, really.
Well, lack of oxygen.
Well, and it was so interesting to see after the end of 3 weeks, you know, at the end of the 3 week run, how that big fight to the death in the alleyway became slightly more of a tarantelle towards the end. But you know,
couldn't resist.
But you brought such, dare I say, panache to the role of Cyrano.
It was, you know, people, I'm not saying this because you're interviewing me. People often enough ask me, what's the favorite role you've ever played? And I said, I have to say Cyrano.
Well, God, I would love to do that show again, now that I know what I'm doing. You also said another thing that I think is really interesting once. I complimented you on your part, on your role in on an episode of Law & Order, whatever it was. And you said, oh, thank you. Well, I played my note.
And I did.
And I thought that was just a very interesting way of thinking about roles.
Yeah.
You know, some roles have a very limited range, and you have to play those notes, but you have to nail them at the exactly. Yeah. And then other parts, like Cyrano, give you an entire symphony of notes to play.
Oh, man, yeah. That was the... I mean, I've never done a big part in, except on soaps, but in television and film, otherwise, I've never done big parts. But a lot of theater during that same 8 or 9 month period, yeah, previous to Cyrano, in New York, shoebox theaters,
yeah,
you know, not Broadway houses. And to come up to that theater in New Hampshire and to have a role where you could, you know,
yeah,
just expand and, in every which way, was thrilling, just a thrilling experience to pull out all the stops, as the writer did, Rostand, for
yeah,
that, whoever that actor was that he wrote it for.
Right.
You know.
Well, and do you get to pick, are you in the position now where you get to choose your roles based on, well, that's a great role, I'm going to go do that role? Or do you have to take what comes along because times is tough?
Well, I've always tried to... have enough money in the bank, right?
There you go.
So that I could turn things down that I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And maybe that's partly the part of the reason why I've had such an interesting variety of roles. But also, of course, my look can be either leading man or supporting guy or character man or
yeah,
villain.
Yeah.
All across the board.
Yeah.
So I've done all of that. And no, picking my roles once in a while, it's happened. I'll say to the agent, I see some in the breakdowns, and I say, if you haven't thought of me for this, you know, I'd like to do this. And I'm trying to remember which one it was where they hadn't thought of me, they submitted me, and I went and got it. I got the role.
Nice.
And it wasn't something that people would have thought of me as. Now, why can't I remember what it was? Because I'm demented, that's why. For somebody who doesn't often pick their roles, there have been a great variety offered
yeah,
to me, or to come in and audition for. And so, again, lucky.
Dennis, thank you for what is clearly now your fifth, sixth, seventh decade of surpassing expectations and making it up as you go along. Well done, sir.
making it up as you go along. You know, one of the tricks, I think, in life is being open to possibilities, and because you can go blindly by them if you're on your own agenda, right?
Right.
If you're just don't know what the hell you're doing, like I.
Yes.
It can work out.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your counterintuitive career strategies via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippy, Nutcracker Prince Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Hamish Adamson. No reason, it is just random. Very special thanks to the late Peter Bergman from the Firesign Theater, who sadly passed away last week. Peter and all the Firesign guys had been huge influences in my youth, and in the last two decades have become friends. They were and are an inspiration. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 275/825 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And now, the late, great Peter Bergman as radio sports reporter Chump Threads on the Firesign Theater album, Give Me Immortality or Give Me Death.
Now they're all in there after the puppet.
Oh, belly up and put him down. I'm Chump Threads, and I'm coming up at you with Sports in Your Shorts. Lately, I've been getting weep-eyed woosgrams and punk-ass calls from fans who are bummed by the blood on the ice. They say they're way gross by the broken bones on the boards, and the poor babies are boffing over the twisted bodies in the bowls. Hey, you don't want to see it? Get yourself blinded.
You're the man, Chump.
Yeah, I am the man, and here's my pick of the day. Don't bet the pros, they're cons, and the colleges, they're goons on the take. Put your money on junior high soccer.
You're the man, Chump.
The George X Middle School stool fruit bats are home to the St. Stool Sand Dabs. The bats are totally pumped. They're going to punk them and pork them. The Sand Dabs are bacon. The fruit boys are going to have their Elvis day. The bats by 30 goals. I'm Chump Threads, and I'm out.
The chump has left the building.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.